Next up, we have Patricia Kohlberg on Race and Science.
Good morning. I'm Patricia Kohlberg, and today, in honor of Black History Month, I would like to revisit and update a discussion from a century ago about the role of science in promoting white supremacy. It's been a bad few years for science. We've witnessed both a vicious attack on science as untrustworthy and irrelevant, and a corresponding defense of science as an unimpeachable guide to a better future. The truth lies somewhere in between. As a former physician and a current climate justice activist, I've been steeped in the principles of science and its practical application for decades. In my experience, science can as easily fail us as support us in the project of dismantling social injustice. Many folks harbor a deep suspicion of scientific findings, which is well-founded given a long history of the abuse and misuse of science by an array of private and public entities. Science has value only when practiced with integrity and transparency, but sometimes even that is not enough. All of us approach the material world from the vantage point of our values, and our values shape what we observe and how we observe it. During the mid-20th century epidemic of polio, for example, doctors examined the muscles of polio patients and judged that the sick muscles were those that appeared paralyzed. This fit in nicely with prevailing values around doctor-patient hierarchy and the passivity of the patient, who had to submit to long periods of enforced rest for the muscles to recover. Then along came a medical outsider, a nurse from the outback of Australia, Sister Elizabeth Kenny, whose own values emphasized self-reliance and the insistence on active participation of the patient. She examined those same muscles of the polio patient and came to the exact opposite conclusion. The sick muscles, she said, were those that were abnormally contracted, like a Charlie horse, not those that appeared flaccidly paralyzed. It took her more than 30 years to prove the value of her observations and revolutionize the care of polio patients. All of these issues regarding the practice of science were at play at the turn of the last century when W.E.B. Du Bois began his critical examination of science and racism. Jordan Bezek is an assistant professor of sociology at University at Buffalo. I'm going to read sections from an article he recently published in an online journal, The Conversation. Bezek writes, "The NAACP published the first issue of The Crisis 110 years ago. For almost 2.5 decades, sociologist and civil rights activist W.E.B. Du Bois served as its editor, famously using this platform to dismantle scientific racism. At the time, many widely respected intellectuals gave credence to beliefs that empirical evidence exists to justify a natural white superiority. Tearing down scientific racism was thus a necessary project for The Crisis. Under Du Bois's leadership, the magazine laid bare the irrationality of scientific racism. Less remembered, however, is how it also sought to help its readers understand and engage with contemporary science. Du Bois's editorship was just as much about critically embracing careful, systematic, empirical science as it was about skewering the popular view that blacks were naturally inferior. Du Bois's insistence on a critical embrace of science can be an important part of that struggle for an emancipated politics and can help people better tackle pressing issues like environmental justice, healthcare disparities, and more. Du Bois demonstrated how to reject racist science without rejecting the ways that science can help people better understand our relationships with the world and that our relationships with each other are not determined by nature, but are under our own control." That was Jordan Bezek writing in The Conversation about W.E.B. Du Bois and his reflections on science. A century later, scientific racism is not dead. Dorothy Roberts, professor of law and sociology at University of Pennsylvania, writes about what she calls the emerging biopolitics of race in her 2011 book entitled Fatal Invention: How Science, Politics, and Big Business Recreate Race in the 21st Century. She writes, "Only a decade ago, the biological concept of race seemed finally to have met its end. The Human Genome Project, which mapped the entire human genetic code, proved that race could not be identified in our genes. On June 26, 2000, when President Bill Clinton unveiled the draft genomic sequence, he famously declared that, quote, human beings, regardless of race, are 99.9% the same. But, as Rogers notes, reports of the demise of race as a biological category were premature. Instead of hammering the last nail in the coffin of an obsolete system, the science that emerged from sequencing the human genome was reshaped by a resurgence of interest in race-based genetic variation." She goes on to detail the ways scientists exploit dubious scientific findings to shore up antiquated racial classifications and create opportunities for profit-making. "The worst consequence," Rogers writes, "is that this delusion of biological inferiority permits a majority of Americans to live in perfect comfort with a host of barbaric practices and conditions that befall blacks primarily." Rogers makes a further crucial point. She writes, "It would be a mistake to think of this work to establish race as a biological phenomenon as confined to scientific racism. The term implies an exceptional use of science to support racist ideas. Calling it scientific racism identifies the problem as scientists' corrupt misuse of race rather than their support of race itself." What Rogers points to is that racist ways of looking at the world penetrate the practice of science and shape its findings. Science cannot be free of racist bias until society itself is free. I've been reading today from Jordan Bisick's examination of W.E.B. Du Bois's century-old writings on scientific racism and Dorothy Rogers' book on today's particular reincarnation of racist science and how it serves the interests of capital. Later today, on the Old Mole webpage, we'll post links to the article, the book, and other related works that might interest you, our listeners. I'm Patricia Kohlberg, reading and commenting today for the Old Mole Variety Hour.